Think session number 10413, rule 6.
Mr. George South, Reel 6, while you're at WASI, Aussie, however we say it, will you be training at all in a motorised role, or will you be coming motorised?
We started training as a motorised unit, and busing and debusing, quickest way to get in and the quickest way to get off, what to expect.
What was the quickest way to get on and off?
Pile over the side, if you were being strapped or anything. There was footsteps to go in. You all had your own positions where you sat.
Oh, you always sat in the same place, did you?
Mm-hmm. Unless you were on the brain gun. The brain gun was mounted for ACAP purposes. And after a while, we moved to Gondi Corps, where we were still practicing.
That would be round about April.
Mm-hmm. And my company was in a little village called Heron. And my section was out in the wilds in a lonely farmhouse. And this is the first I ever met where the Frenchman had no time for the Englishman.
What was that? Explain.
Yes, I can explain. The old farmer used to be always complaining to me about what my section was doing. If he met you on the street, he would spit at you. And he would do anything to get you out of his farmhouse, because he was living downstairs and we were living upstairs. He was always complaining. You know, we used to get the old Dixie out and fry up and complain about the smell of buttermilk and that. And we had quite an awful time with him. And yet in the village, everybody was, you were welcome to everybody. But this old farmer, I don't know why, I never found out why. The whole time we were there, he gave us a rough life, if he could. I mean, there was times when we used to just shove him out the road and ignore him when he was complaining. But, as I say, if you walked past in the street, he would spit at you. And I once asked a French woman that used to make a lot of fuss about the boys, why it was so. And even in the village he wasn't very well liked. But it brought home to me there that I was one of the boys. Through being billeted with these 8 lads, sleeping together, we became friends. And gradually then, I was accepted as one of the boys.
While you were at Heron, were you involved at all in this business of constructing defence lines, anti-tank ditches?
Yes.
How did you go about it?
We used to go, we were picked up in lorries and taken out to this place where we were digging these tank ditches. We were digging all day. They were about 12 foot deep in the bottom.
How wide?
Oh, 4 or 5 yards wide.
So what did you do with the spoil?
It was carted away. We made a parapet. Where we were was very, very muddy. We shored it up, our timber, anything we could lay our hands on. And we worked hard on them for nothing. At the finish, they just bypassed them. But,
were there any pillboxes or concrete bunkers or anything like that?
Well, the IREs used to build those, we didn't build them.
Were they doing them in that area, or were they just...
They were building some, yes. But we had nothing to do with those.
Were you surprised that the war was so quiet?
Yes. One thing the 8th Battalion had was a very strong football team. And through Colonel Beard, they challenged the 2nd Battalion at football. And the 2nd Battalion also had a strong football team. In fact, in 1939, they were in the final of the Army Cup. They were beating 1-0. And so we entrained one day, embussed one day, and travelled to the 2nd Battalion. Played them football, then embussed and came back.
Was that when they were at Nomain?
Just on the side of Grumont. And I met quite a lot of the old boys I'd served in the 2nd Battalion with. And I had a right day. And we came back.
Who won?
I can't remember now.
Was there a particular rivalry between the regular and the... I mean, that was the regular...
Oh, yes.
The terriers.
Mm-hmm. There was always a rivalry, even if you got two regular battalions playing football, there was rivalry, or any sport. You know, you were out to win, didn't matter who they were or how good they were. And we had quite a day, and then we came back. And wasn't long after that.
What would you do for recreations in the, you know, were you allowed out into the local villages or into Lille?
Once a week, you were taken, so many at a time, into the city. And then back.
And what sort of things would you get up to?
Well, the usual things. Looking for a good woman. And boozing. And not everybody. Some used to go just for sightseeing. Because we had quite a few. At that particular time, we had quite a few teetotalers. And boys that kept their noses clean, very clean at that particular time.
Were you drinking by then?
Well, yes, I was drinking. And I wasn't very keen of the brothels. Although I was going for a drink because it was cheaper in there than it was in the pubs. And we used to go in the pubs in the village where we were at, sing song every night if you went on duty. Looking for... we were always getting rumours that there was a fifth column knocking about somewhere. And in fact, There was a very beautiful girl in Erin that a lot of people used to fight over and chase. And she turned out to be a fifth column at the finish after we'd left.
How did you find out?
Well, the people of Gondicore, where we were stationed, kept in touch with the battalion after we went. In fact, we had the band with us at that particular time. And when we were rushed up to the front, the instruments were left behind in Gondicore. And they buried them. The French people buried them. And after the war, we got a lot of those instruments back. And in fact, not so long since, when the seaman strike started, a fortnight after that strike started, there was members of the Burma Band and members of the 8th Battalion were going back to Gondicore to receive some more instruments that belonged to the 8th Battalion. And through this seaman strike, they had to cancel it. So when they're going again, I don't know. But we were there till the balloon went up. And we were rushed up to Grammont. And then we went to a village outside of Grammont. And I had two First World War soldiers in my section who were getting on in years then. And we went to this village, I just forget what to call it now. But these two old soldiers said to me, come up the street with us. There's a little shop up the street, if it's still there, that in the First World War, we were here, and we were very friendly with the shopkeeper and his wife. So I went up the street with them, and this little shop was there. Tobacconist, cafe. You know? So we walked in, and this old fella was sitting. These two lads says to him, have you any red label woodbines? And they mentioned his name. And he looked at them. And he went out the back. And he came back with the madame. And he said to these two, what did you ask for? Red label woodbines. And he said his name again. And the old lady says, how are you? And she mentioned the first two names. And we had a hell of a night in there. The bottles was out. And when we got back, the remnants of the 2nd Battalion were coming back, and they had very depleted. And we got a scare that the paratroops were dropping. So we were rushing backwards and forwards, looking for these paratroopers, but never found anything.
So you'd moved up to Grammont round about May 16th.
Mm.
And this was that day and the next day. These sort of false alarms, what caused them? How did the rumours start?
Well, you could never pin it down. While we were there, I remember the rumour going around that two nurses had been shot. Because they'd found out there were two Nazis dressed as nurses. Now, you can never pin it down, you know. Rumour used to fly from one section to another, from one platoon to another. And unless you actually seen it, it was just a rumour. And then I think it was the next day we were ordered to withdraw.
So you were just there a day and a half?
Well, I wouldn't like to say it was a day and a half. I don't think it was very long.
Did the 2nd Battalion, did any of them come back through?
Oh, yes. Very few. But Captain Burden Taylor... came through. He was wounded on his way back, and he said they'd been badly cut up. There were very few of them left, and the remnants of the 2nd Battalion came through.
What condition were they in?
Very poor. I suppose. Nobody realised what war was about. And the shock of being fired at, shelled, bombed, it took some getting used to. And things became, later on came, quiet chaos. You're going one way one minute and another way another minute. Nobody seemed to know what was going on. And we did a force march.
Back from Grammont?
Back from Grammont.
What was morale like? I mean, you'd seen the regulars that had been beaten. How was morale in your...
Well, it was still the same. It was still the same. Because at that point, we hadn't hit anything. You know, we were just went up there, listening to rumours, looking for paratroopers. And the war was just a little bit further away.
So you were still fairly confident?
Oh, yes. Aye. And we did this force march back. And
was there any problem with other army units or refugees?
Not at that particular time. The only thing we found was the French army all seemed to be riding bicycles. And as I say, we did this force march back, and we were in the billet, in this big billet in. This village we're in, and we're having a foot inspection. Because after digging these tank tracks, we'd been wearing rubber boots and up the knees in mud and that, our feet were soft. We hadn't had time to, you know, harden them up again. When somebody came shouting that the paratroopers was landing just across the road.
Now, who shouted that?
One of the NCOs, or whoever he was, I don't know.
Durham.
One of our own NCOs came running in saying that paratroopers was landing. And so everybody, boots on, grabbed the rifles and what had you. And we went out looking for these paratroopers, which we never found yet. We were out about 2 hours. Looking for these paratroops, we never found them. And the next day, we started marching again, and we hadn't marched a long way.
Were you having trouble with your feet?
No, fortunately. I had one blister, I think, one little blister. That was all.
Is that because you had any tricks of the trade for looking after your feet, or were you just lucky?
Well, I used to look after my feet. I always have, even today. I always say a man without feet is buggered.
How did you look after them? What would you do that some of the men would perhaps not bother doing?
I used to do all sorts of things you would never think of doing.
Such as?
Well, I used to urinate in my socks. I used to take well care of my feet. I always wash them every day. Dry them. And I never used to take my boots off. Even when I went to sleep, I always kept my boots on.
Was that to stop them swelling when you took them off?
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people never used to look after their feet, you know. And we didn't march far that day when came the transport. And got on the transport and we transported back.
Where to then? Where were you getting?
I'm just trying to think whether that was to Vimy or not. It's that long now. I believe it was Vimy. We went into a place called Gavinci.
So what happened there?
Very little. That we were strafed and bombed.
Was that your first time under fire?
Well, only from aircraft. And then...
How did you cope with that?
Well, just take cover.
It didn't worry you very much?
It was frightening when the Stokers was... because they had these sirens on, you know. And the noise of the sirens was worse than the bombs. And then we moved from there to our first action. And we were marching up this road. And we were in reserve, my company. And these high tanks, British tanks, were about 3/4 inch plate, you know. A little 2-pounder guns on. And they passed through our lines, and when we got up to these crossroads, the French tanks were standing, and this German convoy was burnt out. There were dead Germans lying about. There was refugees lying about that had been there while the battle had been on with these tanks and this convoy. And all the troops out of this convoy had dispersed. And the two leading companies was chasing them back.
You were in reserve in this?
And we were in this, moving up to this place, we were in reserve. And we passed this crossroad, and we were fired on from this cemetery. And that was the first time we'd actually met the German soldier face to face, so as to speak. And I always remember, I stepped off the road into this little bit copse, and there was one of the leading company privates lying dead in this copse. And he had 5 bullet holes in the front of his steel helmet. That was the first time I've seen any of our lads that had been killed.
How did it affect you? Were you upset or...?
I was upset, to think that the Germans had shot one of our lads. I also, well, not at that precise moment, but when everything quietened down a bit and we were lying, that the steel helmet was a waste of time. It might stop a glancing blow, but for a point blank range, because everybody felt that the tin hat would save your head, you know. They had faith in it. But I began to lose my faith in that.
Now, that, this, you come under fire from a cemetery.
Yes.
Would that be near Duisons?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And what happened? How did...
Well, this Frenchman, and at that day, I would have said he was the bravest man I've ever met. This Frenchman came down with these three tanks down the road, walking in front of them. He was a French officer. Walking in front of them, and then he turned right into the field and led these three tanks against his cemetery. Cleared them out, shot them up, and some of our lads followed behind and went round to see everybody if there was any prisoners or anything. And the past some Germans that were lying dead, and the last boy was shot in the back by one of these Germans that was dead, or supposed to be dead. He shot him in the back. And I suppose they lost their heads. If there was anybody else alive besides the one that shot our lad, they weren't alive very long.
About how many would there be?
Well, there was about six of them. But they were all lying there wounded, and as far as this section was concerned, they were all dead. But the last one must have been fainting, because he shot the last of the section leaders in the back. And of course, they opened up. And so if any of them, were still alive, they wouldn't have lived long.
So they just shot everything?
They shot everything, yeah. And then the Stokers came, and B Company, which was in the leading company, it must have been anywhere up to 200 Stokers, bombed the daylights out of them. There was very few that weren't either killed or wounded. And we advanced, and for some reason we were withdrawn again into this village where we dug in.
Which village was that?
Something like Walrus, isn't it? Is it Walrus?
Yes,
something.
It would be. Walrus.
Walrus. And we dug in there, and I think it was there where we heard that Colonel Beard had been wounded. And then, where we went from there, I cannot remember. I think we went back to Vimy and dug in.
Was it a very confused situation?
Oh, it was chaotic, man. The French, used to be going into action, and the French will be on your left. And as I said, they used to come on these bikes, fire a few rounds, get on the bikes and go. There was no system at all.